Runners. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and this is the Run to the Top podcast, the podcast dedicated to making you a better runner with each and every episode. We are created and produced by the expert team of coaches at runnersconnect.net, where you can find the best running information on the internet, as well as training plans to fit every runner and every budget. While you might not have been able to join us in person for our first in-person retreat of 2023, Coach Andy and Coach Michael talk in depth about some of the biggest lessons both our attendees and coaches experienced over the four-day weekend. You'll learn why you are not as slow as you think, how your form is better than you realize, that you're not weird if you love running, okay, maybe a little, how not to underestimate yourself, and why connection and camaraderie have greater impacts than we expect. Along the way, they'll discuss super shoes, the marathon trials, USATF scandals, and more. This is a fun conversation and inside peek at what our running retreats are like. You're going to love it and learn a lot. If you're looking for one of the best ways to increase focus and performance during your long runs and workouts, you'll love Perform from the Amino Company. I'll tell you more about them later in this episode, or you can check out the research at aminoco.com/RTTT. If you're someone who struggles to relax and get to sleep at night, I can't wait to tell you more about one of our favorite brands, Ned, and their new Shut-Eye Chai. It's a mellow super blend latte for sleep that combines adaptogens, aminos, functional mushrooms, and magnesium to help calm your central nervous system and improve your sleep. I'll tell you more about them later in this episode, but if you want to learn more now, head to helloned.com/RTTT.
Hey guys, welcome to the Runners Connect Coach Chat. Coach Michael Hammond here. I'm here with Coach Andy Cozzarelli. We are just going to hop into some topics here, talk about the Runners Connect running retreat that we just did in Orlando, our big winter running retreat. We'll talk about the recap of that. Then we're going to talk about some future retreats, really exciting one coming next year, 2024. It's going to coincide with the Olympic marathon trials, which is going to be really sweet. And then Andy and I are going to share five big lessons that we have learned from the retreats. We've done a lot of them at this point, and we have a lot that we want to share about you guys. I think so often it's kind of, everybody feels kind of isolated and doesn't understand like what other people go through going to these retreats, like what other people experience. So we want to kind of like bring some light on it, a little bit of behind the scenes stuff too. And we're going to have a little bit of fun with it too. So let's talk about this year's. Andy, this year's retreat, you know, you guys just finished this a couple weeks ago down in Orlando. It was you and Coach Jeff Gaudette, our founder. Talk to me about it. What went well? What were some difficulties? Just talk to me about the retreat.
Yeah. So it was, I think, a smaller group than what has been in the past. I think years past before the pandemic, we had maybe a little bit bigger group, but this was, it was a nice group. And, you know, we had some different people coming from different areas. You know, this is probably their first time getting in some heat. Some training and some heat this year. So it was, we had a couple of days that was getting a little warm and humid, but I think everybody had a good time. I think a lot of people learned a lot of stuff. We had a lot of different people there from different backgrounds, a lot of different, you know, histories. It was funny when we first got there, we did the little introductions, getting to know people, and Jeff had everyone do, you know, a quick fun fact. And there was actually some really interesting stuff that came out of it. We had one runner who does a lot of in movies and stuff like that. She goes and does the extra roles, and so she was talking about that, which was a really cool thing. But yeah, it's very fun cool to just kind of hear these you know, about the runners themselves and these and where they came from and how they got started, and then also to just hear these little snippets about them as people. And I think it just kind of, you know, creates a really nice connection. So yeah, it went well. I think the biggest challenge is you know, it was kind of, we had some rain off and on, and we were really excited about going out to the clay loop. If you've been to Orlando and the running scene, there's a clay loop, which is now just kind of an out and back, I think, where it's just on this like red clay, and it's super nice to run on. It was really pretty out there. You don't feel like you're in Orlando. But we couldn't go out there when it was raining because it would be a little bit wet, a little slippery. So, we were moving some stuff like that around. But you know, otherwise we had a good time. So.
You know, you talked about like the introductions. It's always funny when you start those off, because you see everybody squirm a little bit because they're like, it's kind of like doing icebreakers again, like you did at high school, you know, summer camp or something. And it's for a lot of these people, you know, maybe they've done stuff like this at work or like work retreats and stuff. But for a lot of people, it's like the first time they've done something like that since they were kids, yeah, in a way. And it's really funny. Yeah. Kind of seeing people squirm. We've tried different things. And ultimately, I think what we're, you know, I've worked a lot of like high school camps in the past, and you can't just do like a fun fact. It's too boring. It's too dull. I've done like little games where like they have to like throw a bottle to each other, and you throw it to a person, and like whoever it is, you have to say their name before it gets to them. Just a way for people to like learn people's names, you know, funny little stuff like that. But we've definitely learned with the adults, like, you just got to let them kind of let them go for it and let them share a little bit. Thankfully, you'll get the people. I'm sure it was like this in Orlando too. Some people are really shy. Some people are just like an open book and are just ready and willing to share every fact of their life.
Right.
You know, like, I'm sure y'all found that in Orlando this year as well.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, and that's, I always feel like that the fun fact question for me is, and I love to talk, like I could talk all day, but that I always am like, I don't really have any things that are like really fun, like really interesting about myself. Right. So then I'm always like trying to think, and I like go second, and I'm like, I don't have time to really think of something good. But it's kind of fun when somebody shares something super interesting, it gets people's minds working a little bit, and you get to hear a little bit more insight. And that was kind of what it felt like. And I think with the group being a little bit smaller, it felt like more easy to just kind of like spill, say what you want to say. So
exactly. Just kind of be willing, be ready to just say whatever. I think that's what you're right. You need that one person who kind of like shares and is a little bit more outgoing with it. And then everybody else is like, okay, it's kind of like nobody wants to go first.
Yeah.
So you need the person who goes first to be a little bit more outgoing, but it's just funny to see people. And again, I'm not saying I'm like totally easily comfortable with it, but it's funny to see people who are in their like 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, who, like I said, you know that they've just never, they haven't faced something like this in such a long, long time. And you see like kind of the nerves build up. But on the flip side, I remember we had a camp that I'm trying to remember which one it was, but we had like flight delays and stuff. Things went crazy, and we weren't really able to do that sort of first night thing. Like everything got so messed up that we weren't able to do it. And people were kind of upset about it. Like people were kind of disappointed. They're like, you know, I kind of had to learn people's names and their stories through like just the runs. Thankfully, it was a smaller camp, so it was a little bit easier. But for the bigger camps, it's always been a lot easier to, and it, you know, I'm thinking about this, Andy, while we're talking about it, I'm thinking about like the people listening that are just like, what the heck are these guys talking about? Like a running retreat. Right. That's weird. Like basically what we do is, it's an idea that, you know, Jeff had this idea a long time ago that we could do, get people together, because we're an online community. You know, we have training plans and we have a bunch of athletes that train with us online, but there's nothing quite like getting together in person. We'll talk about this more later in this podcast, but there's nothing quite like getting together in person. And the idea was that let's bring people together. Let's do like runs together. Let's do some training together, but also let's do training topics. Let's learn, have an opportunity for you guys who come to learn, as well as just to kind of get together and have some fun.
Yeah.
So we've hosted these, and we used to host them in Blowing Rock, North Carolina. Those were a lot of fun. The facility that was there got sold, so we don't use that anymore. But we've done them now in Orlando, Flagstaff, San Diego. We just did New Hampshire back in the fall. And, you know, we've done, I'm trying to remember, there's one other location I'm missing, but we've done a lot of different locations. They're a lot of fun. The biggest, I think, benefit of the winter one is that we get a lot of like Northeastern people who are sick and tired of training in the cold, training in the snow. Maybe they're running like a spring marathon. Usually we get, you know, you get a lot of people who are running Boston or one of the bigger spring marathons, and they come down to Orlando. They get to run in nice warm weather. That's one of the reasons we have it in Orlando. Look, I'm not a Disney guy. Like Orlando is not really my destination of choice, but when it comes down to it, Florida has reliable warm weather. They have cheap flights from anywhere in the country, you know, and we've actually worked out kind of a good like running trails and stuff around there as well. So it's nice and reliable versus we did it in San Diego a few years ago. And you're like, Southern California, this is going to be perfect. I think they said it was like, I wasn't there. Jeff was there. It was like 50 degrees the whole time. And it's just like, it's not what you want for a winter retreat, you know?
Right.
So that's why Orlando is great. Flagstaff in the summer is awesome because it's just generally good. It's warm, of course, but it's generally good weather.
Right.
So that's kind of why we do the retreats. That might still sound weird to people because I think there's just a certain mentality that someone almost has to have to actually like click the button and say, I'm going to go to one of these. A lot of people that we've talked to have kind of said that it's a little bit of a leap of faith, a little bit of like, just kind of like, whatever, I'm going to go for it. You know, I'm going to do it. So it's always, you're right. It's always fun to hear those stories, like people who've had to like, who took their vacation. It's like vacation time from work, or they did it, you know, maybe in lieu of a separate like vacation that they were going to take, something like that. So it's always fun to hear people. But Andy, you had told me before that you wanted to share like at least one particular story from Orlando a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And I think that one of the big things that I've found being at camps and different stuff to begin with is that a lot of people are nervous about their experience level or how long they've been running, or like, do they qualify for being at something like this? And I think that this particular story from one of our actual RC runners, one of the Runners Connect athletes, Fred, he had shared that, you know, he had just started running, you know, in 2022. And his story was that he had some coworkers doing a race and they were trying to convince him. And finally he's like, okay, I'll sign up for the 5K. 5K sold out. So he ended up having to sign up for the half marathon. He's like, all right, I'll do it. The kicker is that he only had 2 weeks to train for this race. And so he got himself in gear. He did some runs, not a whole lot before, but he did some runs and ran a sub 2 hour half marathon in his first time running one, you know, after only having run a couple of weeks. And it kind of hooked him. He got into it, started enjoying it. And then here he
is. Caught the bug.
Yeah. Here he is just, you know, a few months later at a running retreat. And, he's gearing up for his first marathon, which I thought was such a cool story of just like how that transpired. And now where he is, and he showed up, and he maybe at first was like, do I even have the credibility to go to this? And 100%, you know, it's a great learning experience. It's a great opportunity to, you know, especially for new runners, we do some form analysis. And I think that's a big thing that a lot of runners maybe don't know what they're doing, or like they don't know from the form side. You know, anyone can go out and run and move and do all the things, but like, if you want to start seeing some improvement, like what are some things you can do? And that form piece is such a huge thing. And it's something it's really difficult to do remotely. It's when you can do it in person and go through all that, I think it's a really nice, you know, experience for a lot of them. And a lot of them had a lot of the same things. And like, even myself, it was funny. We did the form analysis with all the athletes. And then I was like, you know, I should do one on myself. So I did it, and I my PT saw it, and she was like, were you exaggerating your hip drop? And I was like, no, that was legitimate. That's how bad it was. So it's like, I have a lot of the same things that everyone has, and it's super common. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just kind of like, what can we do to help you prevent injuries if that's something you've dealt with, or even just kind of improve your efficiency just to make it even easier to go out for a run. So.
You know, I got to say, Fred did like a speed run through like the runner life cycle. You know, I think it's pretty rare for us to get like a brand. I'm not saying rare as in it never happens. But the majority of people who come to our retreats are people who've been running for several years. They've already run races. Like, it's pretty rare to get somebody who literally just dipped a toe in like the year before, ran a half marathon kind of out of the blue. And then next thing you know, he's at a runner retreat. I love that. He's just like speed running. Like running. He's just doing it. He's doing it faster than your average person does it. That's great.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Just to kind of, you know, chat with him through that. He's an active person. He's been active for most all of his life. He sails a lot, actually. His first love is the sailing. And so that sometimes he intermixes that into his training, but, pretty cool. Pretty cool story.
You never know who's going to show up. We had a guy when we did, one of our Blowing Rock retreats, we had a guy who, He had been kind of vague with like his travel plans. You know, we always ask people for what are your travel plans? You know, we want to make sure if you're flying in, we want to make sure that we have a van there to pick you up. If you're driving in, we just want to make sure, you know, like what time to get there, how to get there, whatever. This guy was kind of vague with exactly what was going to happen. But, you know, ultimately these are adults. Like, we checked in with him, but he was like, no, I'm good. I'm set. Don't worry. So we just assumed this guy's driving in. Turns out he flew his own little plane into this little strip that's like close by where Zap Fitness is in Blowing Rock. And yeah, it was wild. And he was super nonchalant about it, like super, you know, like clearly he wasn't a guy who like drew a lot of attention to himself. And yet it was like, dude, this guy's a total badass. He just flew his own plane to this retreat. It was awesome.
Wow.
So yeah, you never know who's going to show up. But, you know, Andy, talking about the Orlando retreat a couple weeks ago really makes me start thinking about past retreats and future ones, of course, but talking about the past ones, I've shared this within Runners Connect a lot. So I'm a bit of a broken record within like our own athletes, but when we did the 2020 Orlando retreat, that was the first time we went to Orlando. You know, the previous year was that San Diego debacle where it was just kind of cold and a little bit miserable. I mean, people still had fun, but it was a little bit miserable. So we were like, we got to go to Florida. We got to do it. We're going to Florida. So we go to Orlando. It's this great retreat. And I remember before, you know, Jeff had just kind of like stepped back from his leadership role. He had made me CEO at the time. And I'm sitting there thinking like, this, my big initiative of 2020 is we're going to do more in-person stuff. I realized when I was kind of looking back on the previous couple of years, I was just like, the in-person stuff is where it happens. Like the magic happens. I'm not saying, well, look, we're an online platform. Everything we do online is great. That's where we really, you know, make our impact. But man, in-person stuff is just fun. You know, race meetups, retreats, whatever, just impromptu meetups even. I had all these crazy ideas. And it was interesting because I had actually been reading about, you know, all this crazy crap out of China and you know, but like in the few weeks prior. But I was just like, I remember thinking, I was like, I hope no one cancels the retreat, you know, which is, it's easy to think about that now, like that right now, looking back it with, you know, having experienced the last few years, that seems normal. But at the time, that was kind of a crazy thing to think about, like someone legitimately saying, hey, I'm not coming to this retreat that I've paid a lot of money for. But nobody did. And while we were there, nothing was really out of the ordinary. It was once we got back, the Tokyo Marathon got canceled because, you know, Tokyo was kind of the first domino to fall in a way. And we had an athlete that was at the camp. Her name's Bjorg. She's been to a bunch of our camps. Bjorg's awesome. I've shared many a beer with Bjorg at past camps. And, you know, she had done all this prep. Bjorg's a monster out there training. I mean, just an absolute beast with how much training she does. She was ready. She was ready to rock and roll. We had worked on like getting her iron levels right and stuff. We had talked all through camp about how can we make Tokyo happen as best we can. And yeah, we get back and it's canceled. And I was just like, well, so much for my 2020 initiative. You know, we wound up, not only did we wound up canceling two retreats that we had planned for that summer. I had actually booked a flight to Boston for the Boston Marathon. I was going to go and just do a bunch of meetups and stuff. Had to cancel all that. It was just such a rug pull. And it's funny. We should almost do a whole nother podcast. Maybe that's just me liking the sound of my own voice, but like talking about just like all the, I think there's a lot of things that we as a company did well throughout COVID, and there's definitely a lot of things that we did poorly. And it's definitely, that's kind of where it all began. That's kind of like the starting point. When I look back in 20 years, when I look back at it, that's going to be one of the biggest aspects of it to me. Not talking about like the health side or whatever, just kind of the personal and sort of the business side is how it affected our company and how it affected our members as well. It was really a crazy situation. And I definitely look at that Orlando retreat as we kind of look back at it as kind of like, oh, how naive we were, like how, you know, sort of carefree, and it was honestly really great. It was fun, and I'm glad that we've been able to get back to that at this point. But it was we had no clue what was coming from so many different angles. We were all just blissfully unaware, no idea what was about to happen. So that's when I think of the Orlando retreat, I don't think I'll ever be able to think of it without looking back at that absolutely wild 2020. You know, this is February 2020. It was like early March was probably where, you know, shit really hit the fan, but early February was kind of like, oh, you know, we're all good. We're going to go do these races. It's going to be fun. And then crazy stuff happened.
All that blew up. Yeah. I was actually at the US Olympic trials there in 2020 in Atlanta. And that was, I think it was the end of February that year.
Was it that late?
It was
I thought it was earlier than that. My goodness.
Was it on the leap year? Is that right? I think it was like on the 29th. It was something like the very end of February. And because it was, I think the next week I did a race and I came back from, I ran that race got on a flight, flew to my sister's engagement party, flew back the next day. And it was the very next day that it was like everything, just flights,
everything
was gone. Yeah, yeah. Everything was done. Yeah. And that race was the first weekend in March. So I think it was the weekend before and it was crazy. I was just like, what are, and you just had this huge, you're at this huge in-person event where there's just, and you don't think anything of it. And then this happens and it's just like, and that leads me into my first Runners Connect retreat was 2022, which was the first one we had coming back from the pandemic. And I remember feeling a little bit awkward because I, you know, I hadn't been around people in like large social settings in so long. It was still kind of this like gray space of like, where are we within this? You know, the mask wearing was kind of in and out. Like, what are we supposed to be doing? What's the, what are the rules? And so I was like, I felt a little bit nervous. I also felt a little bit just like uncomfortable being in social settings. It was like, I hadn't done that for so long that I was like, I don't know how to be social again. I'm like, I'm naturally normally somebody who's extroverted and enjoys that stuff. And like, I was in this like, oh my gosh, like what I talk to people, like what's going on. And so like that
suddenly
was
socially awkward.
Yes. Yeah, I was like, this is the weirdest experience for me, but it, you know, everything ended up great. We had a good time. We worked around it as best as we could and made sure that everybody felt comfortable doing what they needed to do and, you know, behaving in that way. And I think that it ended up great. We had a somewhat smaller group as well compared to last year. It was like, I think fairly similar in terms of numbers. And, yeah, it was, we went to one place. The funniest thing about that retreat was we got on this kick of researching alligators at one point. It was like a new fear was unlocked in me, like going out running, you know, there's all kinds of things that I worried about, but like alligators, it was not something I'd ever thought about, being that I've never lived, you know, in an area where that's prevalent. And one of the runs we went to was, it was beautiful. It was really a really nice run, but it was along, it was Lake Apopka, I think is the name of the lake right there. And that you, we saw, there was several times where you saw an alligator either sitting down to the side or lurking in the water. And they're not really that interested in people unless it's mating season, I guess is what we found out. Cause we, I mean, we heavily were researching, like, could there be, right. But it was kind of funny. We had some conversations about, you know, the alligators, people took some pictures with them in the water from a safe distance. No one was, no one was, you know, doing something, anything crazy, but it was, kind of fun. It was interesting. We had a good time.
Y'all needed to get advice from Florida Man. You know, you need to find Florida Man and be like, all right, what, how dangerous are these alligators to, yeah, to runners who of course Florida Man would say, no, not at all. It's totally normal occurrence for us. You know,
not a big deal. Yeah.
That's Florida. It's so interesting. What a funky state. And it's, like I said, it's definitely for me, it's like Orlando, not really my top destination in a lot of ways, but it's so convenient.
Yeah.
You know, it's so convenient for so many people from a flight standpoint. That's one of the biggest things we think about is like, look, we have to charge a good amount of money for these retreats. They're expensive to put on. They just are. We don't really even make that much money from these retreats. Truly. We really don't.
Yeah.
And the worst thing to do, the thing I hate doing, is charging all this money for the retreat and then knowing that people are going to have to spend a fortune on travel.
Yeah.
You know? So that's one of the best things about Orlando. It's just like almost no matter where you are in February, you can find some cheap flights.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
So
speaking of Orlando, one of the interesting things that we have that we've decided now is we're obviously going to do Orlando next year, 2024, and it's going to coincide with the 2024 Olympic marathon trials, which are in Orlando, which is really, really sweet. I'm definitely super excited about that.
Yeah. There is a little bit of controversy over the location. Oh, yeah. So, you know, the originally the board had unanimously decided on Chattanooga, and the CEO or the director, I think it was mostly the top guy.
Just so everyone knows, this is USATF, USA Track and Field. A lot of people, your average runner may not have any clue about that USATF even exists. And part of that is because they're terrible in a lot of ways, but we'll talk about that. Continue, Andy.
We could have a whole coach chat on just that, but so the CEO decided to change that unanimous bid for Chattanooga to Orlando. So when it was announced, I think it was a little bit of like a surprise, like what's going on here, why did that happen? I think it's going to set up for a really fun experience for the campers. It's going to be, or the retreaters, it's going to be very cool. Like I'm excited from that perspective. It's going to be, it'll still be a fun event. I think the USATF, the Olympic trials generally is just like a good, I think it drums up a lot of excitement for the sport, which I think the more the excitement there is in the sport, the more that it's going to benefit everybody. Like all the races that you go to are going to be really well put on. All these things are just going to be better. And, but you know, with this one and that change, it reminds me back to the same thing happened in the 2016 Olympic trials, which were in LA. There was a, again, I think, the board had decided and recommended that they should go to, I think, Houston. Might be wrong
Houston.
On that.
It was Houston. Okay. I'm pretty sure it was Houston. Yeah.
Pretty sure it was Houston. They changed it to go to LA. And I think there was a lot of oversight in that decision. I think, there's like a lot of things I just didn't think about, and it ended up being a pretty hot day in LA, and I actually got some of the numbers from
it
that.
It was scorching. You don't have to say pretty hot. It was absolutely scorching. Everybody was like, people were dropping like flies, right. But yeah, go ahead with the stats.
So there were, at that 2016 Olympic trials, there were 244 women that qualified and 211 men. 105 of the men finished and 149 of the women finished. So that's 64% and 75% respectively. I mean, and this is like, you're talking about a lot of elite athletes that went out there to race, and that's the attrition rate. And I think part of it had to do with some decisions USATF made. I mean, they were televising the event, so it didn't start until 10. And so it ended up being really hot. And then on the streets of LA, you're just on blacktop. So, you know, it might've been maybe mid 70s, but when you're out there, I actually raced it. I dropped out about halfway. So I won I used to joke that I won the half marathon that nobody else knew we were running, because I finished, everyone else ran the marathon. I was there for the half. But yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. So it was, it like feels even hotter when you're in, the sun's coming down, beating on you. There was no shade. You're in the middle of the blacktop where the heat just kind of feels like it's almost, you know, dissipating more, you feel it more. So it was kind of just like this, just not, you know, fantastic experience. So it makes me wonder what's going to happen with Orlando, with it, the shift being to Orlando, like what else are they going to surprise us with? Are they going to make sure the race is early enough to ensure the athlete's safety? Yeah.
You are being way too nice about this. Like USATF is, yeah, such a joke in so many ways. Like, I mean, look, running, I'm not one of those people who believes that running in America is ever going to be like as popular as the NFL. I'm not a fool. You know, like the NFL has such a mass appeal to it that it's perfect in a way from a big sporting angle. But running could be so, so, so much bigger if we just had like more competent leadership. To tell people, like, you know, we kind of glossed over what happened there. People are probably like, what the heck? Like, it was going to be in Chattanooga. All of a sudden, it's in Orlando. Well, it turns out that it was Runner's World broke this story. It's such a stupid story. That's why I hate that it's even like this controversial thing. But turns out that basically a guy who works for USATF, he was on the board, had who was one of the ones who had recommended Chattanooga. He was part of like kind of the scout team of sort of like making sure that Chattanooga is going to work. They, you know, and there's a lot to look at. I understand that's a big responsibility. You have to make sure the course looks good. You have to cooperate with the local government. You have to cooperate with the police. There's a lot of things that go into it. But turns out that this guy had gotten a consultant's fee for it. This says he got a consultant's fee that was less than $8,000 from the city of Chattanooga. And I guess what they're implying without necessarily saying it is that this was like sort of a bribe in a way. But it sounds so stupid. $8,000. Look, I'm not saying $8,000 isn't like a lot of money, but you've got like, you know, these big World Cup soccer events where you have like tens of millions, maybe more, that's getting like, you know, you read about these crazy scandals and it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool in a way. Like it makes the sport sound really grandiose and really big. Like, yeah, oh man, there's all this money. Yeah, the Olympic trials and the marathon in America were moved because of $8,000.
Right.
It's such a joke.
Right. And you know? I mean, in LA, it was just that they made so many bad, the stuff that happened, like they didn't have, there was I think a Runner's World article on this as well. They were supposed to have sponges on this course and they didn't know until the morning of that they were pre-filled with soap, so they couldn't use them. So they had volunteers ripping up t-shirts. And this is like supposed to be this event that's like the epitome of the, you know, the Olympic trials is like the biggest thing in the U.S. for distance runners from the elite perspective. And they're ripping up t-shirts and towels. And I mean, they were tiny. They were only like a couple inches long, and people, that's what they were giving us to cool ourselves off on the course. Not really that adequate for what, you know, what people needed in that, in those conditions. And I dropped out, I think around, yeah, like I said, halfway. And they had said in the day before, if you're going to drop out, do it at the start finish line, which I laughed at until it happened. And I didn't drop out at the start finish line. And then I was like, I think I was a mile from the course, but I was suffering from heat exhaustion. I didn't know that until a little bit later. But the medic that came to me, he told me I was fine. I don't remember him giving me any fluids, nothing. And I mean, most of the people he was treating was for heat illness. And I, you know, I don't know whose job it was to like make sure that all that stuff was well fleshed out, but I dropped out. And then I thought, okay, well, I was just being a baby dropping out when I did. And so I just shuffled my way back. I walked a whole mile back to I had people with me. When I got back to near the start finish area, I went, collected my stuff. And then I, passed out on a street corner from heat exhaustion. Same medic came back to see how I was doing. And he was like, didn't I already see you? And I was like, you did.
Yeah.
And I ended up, I had to get IV fluids on the street corner there. And, then I had to get taken to the hospital via ambulance. And, that was a whole thing. You know, the expense of that was just unreal when it could have been avoidable. It was 100% avoidable.
Easily avoidable.
And it took me probably a year. I had to go through USATF's insurance to get them to cover it, because I dropped out because I didn't get served correctly when I dropped out. Like they didn't do their due diligence. They didn't help. And so it took me forever to get the, everything covered up from that. I think I still had to pay a little bit because my insurance only covered part of it. And then I got USATF to cover as much as I could and then paid the rest of it. But it was just kind of like, it makes me worried when that kind of decision, and I feel like that one had a lot to do with the money that the CEO was probably bringing in. I think there was also recent stuff that's come out against Max Siegel, who the CEO of USATF. And, you know, we could probably go on about this forever, but it's just kind of like this kind of stuff is not mainstream. Not like it's not talked about. Like if the NFL, if someone from the NFL, if this had happened at that level, it'd be everywhere. We would know. But this is something that like a lot of people don't know about. And it does impact, I think, all the way through all the races that are out there. It impacts, you know, USATF certification has to be stamped on almost any race in order for it to be usable for different, you know, qualifications and stuff. And so I think it does have an impact, because does the money actually, that USATF isn't using their money to help athletes. They're not helping races. I mean, the USATF, I don't think they put a lot of money towards the Olympic trials. I don't know that for certain, but I know that, just from what I knowledge on the state, the areas that put on the races, is that oftentimes it's really expensive for them to put on the Olympic trials. And so I think even this year they had trouble getting bids for people to want to put it on, because it's expensive.
Yeah. They don't want to do
it. Yeah. And so it's like, well, there's gotta be more incentive. There's gotta be some more ways to develop, you know, more economic incentive for these cities to want it. If they could make money off of it, that'd be ideal. Like, why can't we figure out a way? Why isn't more of USATF's money going towards that? Like, what are they not doing? And that, I think that's part of it. So it makes me a little concerned about how Orlando will end up. If there's decisions being made on money, are there going to be things that aren't as well thought out again, you know, going into Orlando? And yeah, those are important things to consider.
Like many runners, I am always on the lookout for ways to increase my focus and performance during long runs and workouts, but intra-workout nutrition seems to always center on carbohydrates and fueling. But there's more to performance than just fueling. That's why we love using Perform from the Amino Company. Perform is an amino acid-based drink that clinical studies have shown helps improve endurance, reduce fatigue, and increase muscle protein synthesis so you can recover faster after the run. The research also shows that Perform can help improve concentration and focus during long workouts, something many runners struggle with during those tough final miles or repeats. I obviously love the boost I feel when taking Perform, but I appreciate even more that it's all backed by actual science. In fact, you can check out all the research at aminoco.com/RTTT. So if you're interested in giving Perform a try, we've got a special offer for you where you can save 30% by using the code RC30. Just head to aminoco.com/RTTT. That's aminoco.com/RTTT. And use the code RC30 at checkout to save 30%. We've talked a lot about the importance of sleep over the last few years when it comes to both recovery from your workouts and your overall health. Unfortunately, it's still an area where many people struggle. Luckily, one of our favorite brands, Ned, is here to help with their incredible new product, Shut Eye Chai. It's a mellow super blend latte for sleep that combines adaptogens, aminos, functional mushrooms, and magnesium wrapped in a heavenly masala chai-inspired spiced body. Specifically, ingredients such as chaga, reishi, and ashwagandha help calm your central nervous system, which we know is always elevated from training, family, and work stress, and too much screen time. Adding shut-eye chai to my daily pre-bed routine, especially in the cold winter months, has really helped me relax and get my brain ready to sleep, something I know a lot of runners struggle with. It's resulted in feeling much more relaxed at night, falling asleep faster, and getting much more restful sleep throughout the night. So if you're looking for a delicious way to get more relaxed and calm before you go to bed and get more quality sleep, discover how shut-eye chai can revolutionize your sleep. Just go to helloned.com/RTTT and enter code RTTT at checkout for 15% off your next order.
I feel like I should mention, like, before we just keep ripping on USATF, that the trials are still really fun to watch.
Yes.
Like, it's still a super fun event, and that's why I'm super excited to have all the people in Orlando. Like, that's going to be part of the plan, is to go watch the Olympic trials. It's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. But I do have to add, Andy, first of all, Max Siegel made $3.8 million in 2021. That's a massive number. Like, that's not, you know, if he made, like, a few hundred grand, you'd be like, all right, well, you know, yeah, that's good money, but it's like, it's not, you know, it's not money to where you're like, how on earth did this guy keep his job and how on earth does he get this amount of money?
Right.
Something a lot of people don't know. And Andy, you mentioned you had insurance, but honestly, one thing, a lot of athletes will get royally screwed in situations like this, because even if you're a professional sponsored athlete, you don't have benefits so often, like rarely, maybe the top echelon athletes have insurance. But typically, even if you're like a full-time wage sponsored athlete, you're a contractor. Mm-hmm. You don't actually get insurance. Then if you're, you know, the tier that I was when I was competing post-collegiate, I never had a shoe sponsorship, even though I was making, USA finals and stuff. I never had a shoe sponsorship. So I'm sitting there, you know, making pennies, but also not having insurance. I remember when I turned 26, yeah, believe me, that was definitely a scary thing where I was like, I don't have insurance. I mean, I don't have anything, maybe a cheap like Obamacare plan or something like that, but that's not going to cover, you know, not going to cover you till like 10 grand or something. So you got a situation like you went through that can absolutely ruin an athlete, and you're sitting there waiting for months, maybe even a year at that point, for USATF to cover something that should have been, first of all, it should have never happened to begin with.
Right.
And second of all, the coverage of that should have been a no brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause
absolutely no brainer.
The race was in February of 2016. I ran my first marathon. I finished my first actual marathon because I qualified with a half for the Olympic trials in 2016. And, right. That marathon was November of 2016. So I think it was maybe the week of that race that I actually got final word what they were going to cover. After a lot of back and forth, and I luckily had somebody to advocate for me. I was working with Wazelle, and the team manager there was like, this shouldn't be something you have to deal with. This is ridiculous. And she actually found who I needed to contact, who I needed to go through, and started helping facilitate that process. But like you said, so many different runners don't have that accessibility. They don't have the people that, like, I didn't even know. Like, I had no clue. I just remember my hospital bill for the ambulance bill that was super high. it was a 3-minute ride. I remember when I got in the ambulance that it was like ETA 3 minutes. I heard him say it. And it was like a quarter of a mile. It was just around the corner. And it was, I think, somewhere around like $1,400 just to go 3 minutes away.
Just the ambulance ride. Yeah.
And it was funny because my boyfriend laughed. He was there with me when all this was happening. And he was like, if I had known how expensive it was, I would have just thrown you over my shoulder and then just
dragged you back
there.
And you over there.
Like, this is not the, I mean, the hospital bill was mostly covered by my insurance. It was the ambulance ride that was the problem. And I was like, this is ridiculous. But yeah, you're right. I think it's, I heard a statistic one time with that. What is it? I think 5 out of the top 10 in every distance or discipline in track and field is making below the poverty line.
Below the poverty line.
Just so unacceptable. Yeah. The benefits that that USATF gives out is mostly to people who are national champions or so in that those people already have sponsorships that are paying them salaries. And you know, the thing I also, it makes me angry recently is not that this happened recently, not like it's a good thing, but, the maternity pay that angered me because the way they announced it was, oh, look what we're doing. Look how great we are. We're offering maternity leave. And I was like, it's 2022. why is this exciting to you? This should have never, it's like, it's sad that we're just now recognizing that that's something that should be offered to female athletes. And
so they're offering it at all, to be honest with you.
I know, right?
Like, unfortunately, that is an accomplishment for USATF.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Right?
It's like, it's kind of a bummer that sort of is like,
right. Yeah.
Wow. Great news, I guess.
But again, it's only going to be, you have to qualify for it. It's probably still going to only be your already Olympians. You're already, So I think that's where a lot of this stuff gets buried. It's like they offer it, but it's like the tiny amount of people, it doesn't help to grow the sport. Cause you know, most people aren't going to shoot for that. And I think that's a problem. I felt like there was a really good resurgence of, distance running in the Atlanta trials. Partly, I think, because Atlanta was like, we're going to cover everything for everybody and make it super accessible. So I think a lot of people were like, oh, let me go for it. And I had the stats on that. There was 511 women who qualified in 2020 and 260 men. You know, we just looked at, we had 244 women in 2016 and 211 men in 2016, and compared those numbers compared to each other, just insane. Like that jump, especially in the women's side, doubled. We had double the number. The men's side, not quite as much of a boost, but it's just kind of interesting to see that. When in 2016, I had to pay an entry fee to run the Olympic trials. I don't think they had that this year. Roll Recovery actually went ahead and said, if you had to pay your entry fee, or if you already paid your entry fee for the 2016 trials, we'll reimburse you. So
an entry fee for the Olympic trials. You qualify for the Olympic trials and there's an entry fee.
Yeah. So there was a lot of like,
that's preposterous.
Yeah, and then they gave us all the tickets to things to go to meals and stuff. They gave us one ticket to everything. And it was like $50 to buy another ticket. And I had my family there and I was like, I'm not going to pay $50 for a buffet dinner. And it was for every single thing I would have had to pay another $50 for every additional ticket to anything. And then it was just kind of like, there's an amount of stuff that just the add-ons and the money making that felt very anti the athlete, not anti the athlete, but just not supportive of the athlete. It felt more like this is a production. That's something I hope will continue to get better. I think the LA did fuel the Atlanta trials to be a little bit more focused on doing what was right for the athletes. But it's interesting. Right. So,
well, I think that, you know, we talked about this before we started recording, and I think I'm going to have to kind of like cut it a little bit just because Andy and I could talk about this forever. Right. But like one of the big debates is like, is the goal to send the best team to the Olympics? Which most people would say, of course it is. Most people would say, yes, on its surface, it makes sense. That's your number one goal, is to send the best team. The problem is you have to balance that with something that's going to be good for the sport in America. Like when we're talking about, you know, the American Olympic trials, how do we actually get people invested in the sport? How do we at Runners Connect, how do we get our people who are coming to our camp to be like, yeah, I really want to go watch the Olympic trials? And I think that's where having the Olympic trials on its surface is a good thing, I think, on the whole. I think it creates a really exciting event. I mean, yeah, when you look back at the 2020 trials that we just talked about right before like COVID hit, was Molly Seidel like having this crazy breakthrough to make the team. You know, you had Galen Rupp crushing the race on the men's side, but all this stuff creates this fun. But then the unfortunate thing is that, you know, you're not creating, we're doing like the worst of both. We have the Olympic trials, but we're also not creating a good environment for the athletes to even choose the best team, because you have it in LA when the on the road temperature was probably like 88 degrees or something like that. And you're not necessarily making a good production or a good viewing experience for the viewers as well, because it's so unorganized and so haphazard. You know, I know a marathon is a huge challenge to organize, but my thinking was I keep saying I'm glad it's in Orlando for our selfish reasons that we can be there to watch. But I could see a Chattanooga being really great, because a huge big city may look at a running event and be like, you know, I mean, yeah, that we have the Boston Marathon, it's a historic event that's so massive. But like for most big cities, it's like, whatever. Like we're going to host the MLB All-Star Game, or we're going to host, you know, the NFL playoffs. Like, what do we care about this marathon? Chattanooga, on the other hand, they're going to care about this. Like the city's going to care. The residents are going to care. Chattanooga is a very surprisingly like crazy endurance city. People love running, biking, all that stuff. It's huge for that stuff. And it's smaller to where you could actually have this mass appeal within the city. So just thinking of that, I would have loved to have seen it in Chattanooga. I'm a little bummed to see it in Orlando.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I heard some feedback listening to Kara and Dez's new podcast. So they talked a little bit about this. They talked about something that I hadn't thought about, which is the training or racing on a course that's conducive to what the athletes will be racing on in the actual Olympics. I mean, you think about there's different athletes that have different strengths. And if the marathon Olympics is going to be on a hilly course, the trials should be on a hilly course. Let's send the best athletes at handling that have the strength and have the ability. So that's part of sending the best team, which I think is something that we don't always think about. And so that's why I'm like, that has to be somewhere in the mix and all of this when we think about it. But I think it'll be interesting. I think Orlando is going to be a similar experience to seeing like how the weather impacts who does well. That's where that angle is going to come from. We're going to see a little bit more of that. Honestly, you know, with the Olympics with Molly Seidel, when she placed third, that was a really warm weather race. So like, you know, having in Orlando might not have been bad prep for that, but
You know, what's funny, Andy, I got, just while we're on that real quick, like to kind of close off that topic, I think I actually very much, in a way, I think I actually disagree with Kara and Dez from that perspective, because look, unless someone medals at the Olympics, no one cares. I hate to say that. That's an unfortunate thing to say. But unless you medal at the Olympics, no one cares. Look, 2016, the 2016 Olympics in the 1500 meter. First of all, barely anyone knows that Matt Cintrowitz won gold. Like barely anyone even knows that anyway. But I bet if I asked even big running fans, hey, who else was in that final, that Olympic final? What other American was in the final? Nobody would know. It was Ben Blankenship. He finished 10th place. Amazing run. Mm-hmm. Incredible. Yep. Awesome. But no one cared about it. That's the unfortunate thing. So I think maybe it's because I'm not really a competitive athlete anymore. Maybe I look at it more as like, how can we make the sport big in America? I don't think it's getting more Olympians. I hate to say that, or more medalists, because there's only three. And let's be honest, East African dominance ain't going anywhere. Molly or Galen or whoever will pop the occasional, which is awesome. And I love that. Like, that's awesome to see. But I'm actually as a non-competitive athlete anymore. And especially when we're thinking about this in terms of like, hey, how can we get the Runners Connect members interested in this race? I care way more about the U.S. Olympic trials than I do the Olympic marathon. I know that's crazy. And that sounds non-conducive to like sending the best team and bringing home the most hardware. But again, we're not going to go 1, 2, 3 at the Olympic marathon. It is what it is. How can we create the best event that shares the best stories? You know, I mean, that 2020 race, my goodness, you had Kira D'Amato, one of the best stories in the last 10, 20 years of running, who was there. What an amazing, amazing story. You had Molly, who, you know, crushing her first marathon. You had all these great stories. I'm much more interested in how can we share those big stories and how can we put on a great event. Let's say, okay, yeah, in 2016, it was in Rio. So yeah, the USATF is thinking, we got to send the best team. Let's have it in scorching heat and let's have the most miserable course of all time. And you have people dropping like flies. I'm sorry, that's not a fun experience. That's not a good experience for the viewer.
That's true.
That's not a good experience for anybody to be seeing that, because your average runner, even your average fan doesn't understand that concept that we just talked about. I'm not saying they're dumb. They don't have time to understand this stuff. You and I were competitive athletes. We've been involved in this for a long time. It's hard to explain, hey, the reason this is in 90 degree heat and miserable conditions that's not fun for anybody is because we want to send the best three people that have the best chance of them. That's too much. As an American consumer, I've already tuned out.
Right.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
So I want to create the absolute best event on the day. And that's why it was shameful for me to read about the Chattanooga thing. Cause I was just like, oh my God, a Chattanooga or a Eugene, Oregon, or an Asheville, North Carolina, or a Raleigh would probably be better, a little bigger. Something like that would just be amazing. Cause you have all this built in fan base. You have a smaller city that's going to really, really care about it. And I think they're going to put on a way better event. Okay, maybe there's that tiny little percentage of where it doesn't send the absolute best team for the day. But I just don't think that matters that much in terms of, again, my mindset is so much about growing the sport now and growing the popularity and having, you know, having what is now happening for Formula One happen for running. I still am not. I have friends. One of my best friends named his dog after a Formula One racer. And I was just like, what? I didn't realize that this thing has taken off. I was like, I want to see running do that. That's what I want to see. And I personally think that caring too so much about what the team we send for the Olympics doesn't matter. I think if we're going to have the event, I think we make it the best possible production on the day.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You're right. Cause I think, the big piece of being able to grow the sport in the US is telling the story and being able to portray that and all that. And also, you know, I think creating more opportunities for people to see the people that they idolize. I mean, in Raleigh, North Carolina, we've got the Sir Walter Myler, which I think there's a lot of runners that come to that and people now know who they are. And that's so
amazing
growing it. Yeah. That needs to be so much more, like that needs to be highlighted a lot more. And that needs to become more commonplace. You know, all these races that are put on, I think that when they do a good job of taking care of everyone there, it creates a good experience for everybody. Like it carries through, like they know what they're doing. They know what the athletes want. It's important that that becomes like very central to the way that these races are put on to make sure that, you know, the athletes are taken care of. They're getting what they need. The fans can get the same thing out of it. Because the other thing that I think a lot of people don't know with the Olympic Trials Marathon is that it's a looped course. So instead of being one big course that you do like most marathons, it ends up being like in LA, it was a 2 mile loop followed by 4 6-mile loops. So you get to see the athletes several times come by, which is great.
Better for spectators.
Better for spectators. Really cool. Not as fun for the athlete, but, you know, we'll take it.
You give up a little bit. For the spectator. Yeah, of course.
But
you
it's just
give
a cool
a
experience.
Bit.
Yeah. So it's worth it. So, yeah. I would say there's a lot of stuff we could go on with this, but I think we could
We should probably cap that one there. Yeah. Me and Andy could rant. We knew this was going to happen. We knew we were going to be able to rant on this for an eternity. But ultimately, I kind of want to like bring this back into how is this like all relevant for our runners. So again, come to our running retreat in Orlando next year. As much as we're like crapping on the Olympic trials, it's still a super fun thing to be able
on
to see.
USATF's involvement as USATF. An event.
Right.
Very cool. Right. Super. I went to the one. I didn't qualify in 2020, but I went to it. So much fun. There's so many opportunities to, you know, engage with the athletes. They're out and about in the city. You can find opportunities to go meet people or listen to them talk, or you may see someone like Kara or Dez just walking around if they're not racing. So a lot of cool stuff to get excited about. So
no doubt. But we want to talk, Andy and I want to talk about like bringing this back to kind of talking about the retreats. We wanted to talk about to close this out, close this podcast out, we want to talk about five big lessons that we've learned from the retreats. So often we get emails all the time when people get interested in the retreats, and we get so many of the same questions. And ultimately what I think it comes down to is people thinking that they're not going to fit in at the retreats. So I think these five lessons, we'll talk a little bit about that. But number one, the one that I wrote down right away was, you are not as slow as you think. The reason I wrote this one down is because that's one of the biggest questions that we get is like, I've run a 4:15 marathon. Am I going to get dropped on all the runs? And we're just like, no, like not even close, not at all. We have people, yes, we do have the occasional person who's BQ'd or has run like under 3 hours in the marathon or something like that who comes. Then we have people who are doing run walks while they're there. We have people who are running. I mean, you know, especially when we would go to Blowing Rock to go to Zap Fitness, some of those runs are so hilly and like out on trails and stuff that we would have runs that would take several hours, and we would make sure to plan everything to where we accommodated everyone. But that's what people really realize when they get to the camp. They're like, oh, I'm not really, I think I'm so slow. And yet I come here and I'm running with, I've got running buddies now at this camp. It's definitely an interesting thing to see people kind of have that like, oh, that realization.
Yeah,
when they
well,
get to
I think
camp.
A lot of times too, we do out and backs. So everybody is allowed to go at their own pace. We create opportunities to make sure that people can run with each other if they choose. They can run solo. We know everybody doesn't want the same experience out of it. So there's no pressure to do anything. It's kind of make it what you want. So.
Yeah. No, there's definitely, we accommodate all paces, but more importantly, the people there are not all these fast marathoners. The faster people are the more the anomaly. You know, we get the occasional super fast person that's fun to have at the camp, of course, but yeah, that's more the anomaly. Second biggest lesson is your form is not as bad as you realize. Maybe your form is better than you realize. You know, we do gait analysis of everybody. And it's interesting. When we first started doing it, we would do it in a group setting. And Andy, you guys just did it in a group setting, but we did it in a group setting. And I actually, it's funny, there was a year or two where I stopped doing the group setting thing because I felt that there were people that were getting a little bit like, there were two reasons I stopped that. One was because I didn't want to offend anybody in front of other people. I didn't want to be like, here's how you need to improve your form in front of all these other people. Because like, it's funny, there was one of the Zap camps where Jeff is so like technical with form that the way he said it, he was like, he was doing this person's form and he was just, you know, he was giving them these great tips. Like, here's how you can improve. You've got this hip drop right here. You've got this leg, blah, 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 blah. Just going crazy into it. It was super helpful. And then we had this guy, his name was Grant. He would come to a bunch of our camps and this guy just had like impeccable running form. And Grant comes up and Jeff just goes again from this one where he was critiquing this person, like pretty intensively, really helpful and really helpful. Like not like, you know, giving him grief for it, but just really helpful to Grant's where it was just like, okay. And Grant has perfect form. So, you know, and it was so jarring of a difference. I was like, maybe we should do these one-on-one, but we've actually gone back to doing them, in a group setting. And one of the things that we run into as coaches is we're so often, I start to feel like a bit of a broken record because I'm saying so many of the same things for different people. To the point where I worry that they think that I'm like BSing them, you know, like I don't want them to think that we're just giving this generic advice. The reason we're giving it is because so many people have so much of the same issues. So many of us sit at desks for so long. So many of us drive cars so much, whatever we're, you know, we don't have strong, you know, maybe don't have enough time to do like great core work or whatever. And so often we have so many of the same issues that we as coaches, it starts to feel like we're given kind of the same advice. But Andy, you mentioned at the Orlando retreat this year that you felt like people's form was better than they realized.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people were nervous about it. They were like, oh, my form's going to be awful. I don't want to see it. I think that's like super common. When I would go to the Zap camp, same thing. It was like, you know, a lot of people had some apprehensions around it. And I think that it's something that like some people are a little bit nervous about seeing themselves move. But I think when you start to see them side by side, you start to see that like there's a lot of good things that you do. There's a lot of things that make your running form work for you. And like everybody has a different movement style. And it's just about seeing ways that we can either prevent injuries so we can keep doing the running that we're doing. And you don't have to be at any certain pace to have fantastic form. You could be really fast and have really bad form. I think at the Zap Camp, one of the things that they, was it Bill Rogers maybe who had, I can't remember, it's Bill Rogers, terrible kind of weird, funky form things that he had wrong, still super fast. So there's nothing that's like, you know, we all can have different form issues at whatever speed that we go at. And I think that's important. And like, there's nothing wrong with, you know, having something that you do. It's just knowing it and being able to improve upon it. So,
well, you should really, I tell this a lot to people that you should look at, let's say you have maybe not so great form. You should look at that as a positive. You got to be a little bit glass half full of like, wow, if I make improvements, I'm going to run a lot faster. Like I'm going to be a lot more efficient. I'm going to get injured a lot less and I'm going to be able to go a lot faster and have a lot more fun running. Right. So yeah, it's in a way you almost don't want to be told that your form is perfect because then you're like, oh crap, well that's, you know, I got to turn over some other stones to see where I can improve. Right. Like that's a huge level of improvement for people. But Andy, moving to number three, I wrote, you're not weird. And then I put in parentheses, maybe a little, because one of the big things we get, I talked about this a lot at the beginning, but a lot of people will say when they're introducing themselves, they'll be like, yeah, I told my coworkers or my friends, like, I'm going to this running retreat. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? But what it comes down to is that, yeah, maybe within your friend group, maybe within your coworkers, maybe within your little cohort, yeah, maybe you are a little bit weird. Maybe that is a little bit strange. But then you come to this retreat and it kind of filters through. Like the people that come to the retreats have that certain level of, I guess we can call it weirdness. I mean, at this point, that people end up, you know, you're amongst friends, I guess is a way to say it. Like everybody has maybe the same level of weirdness when they come to the camps, but it's always funny to hear people say how the responses that they get from other people before they come.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah. That's, I think runners tend to also be, we're all a little bit weird. I mean, I always say that like also just like enjoying going for runs all around, like just by yourself or with other people is kind of a weird concept. Like lot of people don't run because they're like, I hate it. That seems super boring. Like, why is this a fun sport for you? So I think like, it's okay. It's okay to kind of invest your time in it and enjoy it and, you know, put yourself out there for it. So
no doubt. Andy, go ahead and give us a, Andy, I wrote those first three. Andy wrote the next two. So we're kind of sharing the responsibility of these. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think the fourth one, the one I wrote down was, just kind of some of the connections that you can get in person are so valuable. For me, that's like the biggest thing that I've ever experienced was just being able to have these in-person connections. I think from when I first graduated from college, I mean, I always had a team. I always had people around me. And when I graduated and I didn't have a team and I was kind of figuring things out, I ran horribly. And then I was able to put myself in a position where I had teammates again and people to interact with. And it made such a huge impact on me as a runner. And I think that the same goes for when you go to camp. You hear other people's stories in real time. You get to hear what their experiences were and how they impacted them. And it helps you in your own training. Like maybe you thought, you know, there's no way I can do X because of this. And then you hear somebody else say, well, you know, I had that very similar experience and this is how it turned out. And I think that it gives some hope. It gives some excitement. It gives some, just like some, a little bit more ability to kind of dream or, you know, what can you do? What do you want to do? What are some things like that? And so I think that the other things that we often don't get unless we have those in-person connections, to be able to, you know, come together on and just hear and share. So
no doubt. I mean, I think back so many of like my biggest memories in the time I've been working for Runners Connect have been from the retreats. I mean, absolutely. As you know, we're an online platform. I keep saying this, that, you know, so much of our value is going to be provided online. But I look back at so many of the stories. Honestly, I'm glad I'm working this one in because I really wanted to talk about this. But one of my favorite stories from one of our retreats was, this was several years ago. I was 27. So, you know, when you're 27, a 27-year-old guy, You know, I think I personally believe I can relate to anyone in terms of like, especially in the running world. If you're a runner, you know, I can find a way to relate to you. I consider myself pretty good at that. At the same time, this was kind of early on. I think it was the first retreat I had done. And ultimately, most of the people that are at the retreats are in their, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, had some come in their 70s. But the one of the first retreats we did, we had these two guys that were probably right, maybe like late 30s, if I had to remember back. And it was super interesting because they, when they introduced themselves, they each were kind of like a little bit ambiguous with like their background and what made them come to the retreat. But one of them said something along the lines of like, with what he and I, they were buddies, they were friends. What he and I have kind of experienced over the last several months, you know, we decided that something like this would be really great. And it just like right away, like a little light bulb went off in my head. And I was like, that's interesting. Of course, we're never going to press anyone to reveal more details than they want to. But it was interesting to hear, because as we said at the beginning, some people are much more of an open book. Some people are a little bit more reserved. These guys were kind of in the middle. They had something to share, but they, you know, this was a group of strangers. They weren't going to just like come out right. Well, through getting to know them, it just kind of became clear to me. I'm not claiming to be some like Sherlock Holmes detective that I like worked through this mystery. It just was very obvious to me that these guys had both been through breakups or divorce, like, and it wound up actually being divorce. So what I did is the last night of camp, this is one of my favorite things to do, is like once all the activities have ended, that's like my favorite part of camp, is like, who's going to still want to hang out and do whatever and, you know, say, I don't care about sleep or whatever. And I asked these guys, this was when we were doing them at Zap Fitness. So I still knew a bunch of the Zap guys from having like trained there and Andrew Colley was there and all these guys were there. And I was like, we were going to go out with them on the Saturday night. So Saturday night's the last night. We were done with everything within the camp by like 9 PM or so. And, you know, again, I'm 27. I was like, let's do it. We're going to go out. It's going to be fun. At the end of it, I was like, you know what? I'm going to ask these two guys. I'm going to see if they want to go. I went up to them at like 8 PM or so. I said, hey, listen, you know, I've gotten to know them throughout the camp. I'm going to go out with some of the Zap Fitness guys. You know, I would love for you guys to join us. They were just like immediately like, yes, like, yeah, we're coming. It's going to be so much fun. It was so awesome because most of the people at the camp would have been like, no, I want to go to bed. Like we've already gone to this brewery. We've already had dinner. I don't want to go out with a bunch of guys in their 20s. Like, I don't want to do that. These dudes, we went out and we had such an awesome time. Like we were out. I think we were out until the bars closed, and we went late down in Boone. Yeah. And they had such an awesome time, got to know them a lot more. They definitely poured out their stories a lot more. And it's funny how that from years ago now is such a memory that stands out to me above even, I don't know, a lot of other things that maybe would make more sense on the surface to be like standout memories.
Yeah.
Just having this experience, giving these guys this experience that they probably didn't think they would get. Like they loved the camp. They left us good feedback and stuff. They enjoyed it. But I know that like that was a huge thing for them because they got to really look. They were, you know, you recently go through a divorce. That's everything that's on your mind. Like running your best marathon next is probably not at the forefront of your brain. You know, even though you're into running, and of course they loved it. That's probably not like the biggest thing on your mind. So it was super fun to just kind of give these guys a more unique experience at the retreat. And it also worked out for me because I was 27 and I was like, yeah, let's go. This is going to be fun. You know? So anyway, that's one of my favorite camp stories to this day.
I love it. That's so fun. Yeah. I think the 2022 retreat, there's a member who's on Runners Connect. And he was there, he was at the camp, and both of our flights got in pretty early and we were just hanging out in the baggage claim because we got in around the same time. And so we chatted for a while, found out he was an engineer and I'm in engineering, and we both kind of laughed about that and geeked out a little bit on some running stuff. I got to hear a little bit of his story, which was kind of cool. Yeah. And so that was a really fun experience. And now I get to see him pretty often on a lot of our, in-person Zooms and stuff like that. I get to chat with him and kind of feel like I'm like more in it. I feel really connected to him, and I really enjoy hearing how he's doing and all that stuff, which makes it so nice, you know, to be able to still have that with some people that we've met at camps.
Sometimes you just can't replace the in-person. I'm glad you wrote that because that was more or less what was on my mind too. I was just like, Man, as much as we push the online stuff and we live in the online space, yeah. That in-person stuff is just so, so powerful. Andy, you had one more that you'd written down as well.
Yes. So the fifth one I wrote was just, there's no qualifications for going to something like this. And I think I touched on this when we first started chatting about it, but you don't have to be any level. You don't have to have any experience. You don't have to run fast. Like, there's nothing that will require you to, that you need to have ahead of time going in. I think even at this last camp, one of the campers or the retreats, whatever you want to call them, one of the members who came had broken her ankle 4 weeks before. And she was like, nope, I'm going to still go. And she was like a little bit like, should I still do this? I can't run at all. She still came. She had a great time. I walked with her one of the days because I wasn't running, and it was great. We got to know each other. We chatted about a lot of different stuff. And so I was like, that's a good experience that she was able to come to a retreat. And even if she's not able to participate in the running side of things, she can still get a lot out of it. So there is no qualifications. You could be not training for a race. You could be training for a race. You could be coming off an injury or coming off a race. So there's nothing that you have to be at personally in order for it to be a good experience to take something away from. So.
No doubt. Because I, Andy, one of the things that I had written down that didn't kind of make the cut, but it sort of falls into this, was how important I've realized that, like, inspiration, motivation, all of that is in addition to, you know, kind of the physiological parts, like training smart and eating right and doing all the stuff right on the physiological. I used to not be that way. I used to think that kind of if you're someone who needs like big time motivation, inspiration or whatever, then that's weak. I used to think of that as a weakness that people, you know, who didn't have the real fire or didn't really have the desire to do it. I've totally changed my tune on that, especially because of stuff like retreats where you get together and it's not a bunch of like rah, rah, you know, like a crazy seminar, you know, getting people to chant and do weird stuff or whatever, but it's more like the inspiration that people will leave with is so fascinating to me. Like, people will leave the retreat with this crazy enthusiasm and just optimism for their running. And I don't, like, maybe some people would look at that and say that that's like fake or that that's kind of that guru type stuff. They can think that all they want. I see it and it's powerful. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely powerful the way that people will feel after leaving our retreats. They'll get there and think, okay, I'm going to learn X, Y, and Z. I'm going to do some cool runs. I'm going to have whatever. And they leave with something that you can't really quantify. You know, you can't really put it into an Excel spreadsheet, like what you're going to get out of this. And I'm not saying every person does. Some people come, they learn X, Y, Z, they get the value out of it. That's great. And maybe they don't want any more, but other people, they really get that synergy, that energy that you leave with that you can't really, you know, you can't recreate that online necessarily.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that really has become one of my favorite parts of in-person stuff. And I didn't want to like over talk of like COVID stuff. Cause I mean, let's be honest, most people were just kind of ready to move on. But, that's definitely something that I'm glad we're back to, is like being able to have stuff in person that we can really feed off each other and get that energy, that optimism, that inspiration, that we get from the camps.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think that's everything we got. Andy, we definitely, as we, Andy and I knew that we were going to be, we each think of ourselves as kind of like ranters, like talkers. And we lived up to that because we are at 1 hour and 8 minutes. Anyone who's listening, still listening, thank you so much for having us blasting in your ears for the last hour. We really appreciate it. This has been actually a lot of fun. And I think that we're going to continue this format. We're going to try some other topics out, but we really wanted to kind of give people sort of like a behind the scenes, less like super structured type approach. So if you have any feedback that you'd like to share, send either of us an email, michael@runnersconnect.net or Andy, A-N-D-I-E @runnersconnect.net. We'd love to hear from you guys. If you're interested in our retreats, by the way, runnersconnect.net/retreat. You can go on there and check out. We have a Flagstaff retreat coming up in the summer. I think we have a few spots left for that, by the way. And then, of course, we'll have Orlando coming next year. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening. We had a great time, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Take care.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and as always, our mission here is to help you become a better runner with every episode. Please consider connecting with me on Instagram at WasatchFinn and the rest of our team at Runners Connect. Also, consider supporting our show for free with a rating on the Spotify and Apple podcast players. And lastly, if you love the show and want bonus content, behind-the-scenes experiences with our guests, and premier access to contests and giveaways, then subscribe to our newsletter by going to runnersconnect.net/podcast. Until next time, happy training.